Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you're listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latah Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I'm Radio Johnny, and for the calendar, I encourage you to go to latahrecoverycenter.org, and you can find it on our cover page there with all the offerings and stuff. And we do have a special calendar announcement. We're calling all Recovery Center supporters, and we're asking, can you serve as a table captain at our March 5th, 7 a.m. breakfast or 7 p.m. dessert? We have a unique opportunity this year. An anonymous local donor is matching all donations up to a total of $60,000. Match funds are being used for paying off the mortgage on our new Women's Sober House. And if you want to get involved in that, I encourage you to email Daryl Keim at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. And he'll get you the full details. But I'm really looking forward to it. It's coming up pretty quick. I got to take some pictures of the staff here, so I have some decent headshots of people to put up on the screen that we'll all have going.
All I'm hearing is, did you send me a picture that you approve of? That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
Either one you approve of, or if you can't find one of those, I'll be happy to snap you with Mr. iPhone and in the pose of your liking. So anyway, today, as you can tell, in the studio / conference room with me is Miss Denise.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, Denise. And today we're going to talk about something out of a publication put out by Alcoholics Anonymous. It's called the Daily Reflections book. And I'm going to go ahead and read it. This is actually from this week's, I think on the 18th of this month. And it says, "Our paths are our own. There was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet." And that's from the book Alcoholics Anonymous on page 25. It goes on to say, "My first attempt at the steps was one of obligation and necessity, which resulted in a deep feeling of discouragement in the face of all those adverbs: courageously, completely, humbly, directly, and only. I considered Bill W. fortunate to have gone through such a major, even sensational, spiritual experience. I had to discover, as time went on, that my path was my own. After a few 24 hours in the AA fellowship, thanks especially to the sharing of members in the meetings, I understood that everyone gradually finds his or her own pace in moving through the steps. Through progressive means, I tried to live according to these suggested principles. As the result of these steps, I can say today that my attitude towards life, people, and towards anything having to do with God has been transformed and improved." And there's a couple major themes in there that really strike me. The first one being that everyone gradually finds his or own pace in moving through the steps. And of steps, of course, they're talking about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. The interesting thing about that to me is that when I went through the 12 steps for the first time 30 years ago, my sponsor, or you know, guide, as I like to call it, moved me through them fairly quick. And I felt like the author here, that you know, I was a little discouraged because of, you know, all the ancient thee and thou speak that was in there. And it, my relationship with God or my higher power, it was still in its infancy. So there's a lot of things that, you know, you need to accept. Like in the third step, it says, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. I didn't really understand God very well at that point. So, yeah, there was some discouragement and confusion. But also, like the author writes in this, I was told I had all the time I wanted to come up with that conception of God or higher power. So, you know, even though I, you know, attended church as a child and was introduced to a God that was pretty frightening, one of these not loving, caring concepts of God, but a punishing God, I was able to set that aside, and through practice of faith, which I'll talk about later, made it possible for me to build a relationship that was healthy and granted me a whole ton of grace that I didn't deserve. Well, that's what grace is. It's a gift that's, it's defined as a gift that is given freely and not necessarily deserved. So, anyway, what are some of your thoughts on that reading, Miss Denise?
So, when I started in recovery, you know, I had to. I was in a program, and I always believed in God. I grew up in a home that believed in God and Jesus. But as far as, like, walking out what that looks like to live in his word and to have a relationship with him, I don't really think that I understood that well until I was in recovery and then started going to my church and being involved in things. And then I think one of the most powerful things was having mentor women in my life that were able to share vulnerably about the things that were going on in their lives or the progress that they had made through their lives, mm-hmm. and how God had showed up for them and helped them work things out. I think hearing their stories and getting to know them better really made a big impact, because along with, like, attending church and reading God's word and doing studies, that all started to culminate together for me to understand what this really was about and how God works in my life and kind of changing around. You know, I think it's interesting. I think that there are a lot of people who have had that experience with church growing up or at some point in their life where it comes off as some kind of a thing in the way that you described, where it's a punishing God and stuff like that. And I'm really glad that I have the experience that I have now, where it's a relational kind of a thing, and that I understand that his word is about, you know, if you're able to follow these things, and he doesn't expect us to do them perfectly. Obviously, we're in a broken world where we sin, but it's because he loves us that he says these things. And so being able to look at the Bible through that kind of a lens instead of the one where things are so rigid, it really helps that I'm reading something where I know it's in a loving way from my Father. You know, the stories that he shares and the things that he tells us to stay away from and the ways to live, once I wrap myself around that. And I think that part of that was from being a parent and understanding how my heart feels when I see my kids struggle with things and I can relate to it, whether it's something that I've struggled with or just understanding struggle and just going, oh man, you know, like, I really want them to do better so I don't have to go through this. And it's out of love, not just like me hitting them over the head wanting them to be obedient.
Right.
I think
right.
That heart
works.
Posture,
that works so well. Yeah.
Right. And I think that's more how I was maybe as a new parent. It was, you know, more like, you need to do what I'm saying because I'm a parent, blah, blah, blah. And I don't really think that got me very far. And I think that my second time around now being a parent, it's more about that connection with each other and more of a cultivating their heart and having that relationship instead of, like, it's inconvenient that you're not doing your chores. Like, that's so, such in a different priority list. Like, it's not even a priority. It's like, you know, it's like, hey, you know, can you vacuum the carpet for me this week? And I'm not going to make a big deal about it. Whereas, like, before, if that hadn't been done, that was just, like, this huge thing, you know.
Right.
But that's not it. You know, it's more of our relationship that we have as I'm their mother and they're my kids.
Right.
And so in that change of tone in my heart, that helps me to understand my Father in heaven. So, and I've grown up. And that's helped a lot, too.
Well, yeah. We grow up, we grow wiser. It's interesting you talk about when you refer to God, you refer to him as the Father.
Yeah, it's my Father.
That irritates a lot of people, but, you know, in the traditional family, back in the days, of Christ and, the Jews and, Old Testament, New Testament, the Father was always looked upon as the guide for the family.
Mm-hmm.
And because they wrote the book from that perspective, I mean, we shouldn't be, too harsh and jump on the idea of the patriarchy, because in those days, that's the way it was. And also, the Father was taught from an early age to try and make good decisions, because in those days, they didn't have antibiotics. And if you broke your leg, maybe they could set it, and maybe you could walk normally again. Maybe you couldn't. So there was a lot of pressure placed on the head of the family to make right decisions.
So let me clarify. So in my mind, there's a big difference between my Heavenly Father and my earthly birth father.
Right, right.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And because I'm a person who grew up with her father dying when I was so young and everything like that, that piece missing in my life.
Right.
It's so good to have that now.
Right.
For me. And I think that's the thing, is like that special, with your faith, whatever, however that needs to look, like, what
right.
do you need, Yeah.
Right.
And for me, that's super important, because it opens up to like guidance and protection and wisdom and love and identity and things like
right.
that, were all these pieces that were missing for me.
Right.
And I didn't know where to look growing up. And so I looked in all the wrong places.
Right.
And so for me, that's kind of special.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some of my sisters in Christ that, kind of go along with the same thing and think of, Heavenly Father.
Right, right. And yeah. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with
but
that.
But I hadn't thought about what you were sharing. That's interesting.
A lot of people refer to it as a Godhead,
mm-hmm.
which kind of removes that patriarchal idea from some people. But it really comes down to, How do you really want to believe? How do you want to look at your higher power? Do you want to look at it, as a specific thing, a specific gender? You don't really have to, because it's beyond that. I think, in the days, like I said, back in those days, the stories in the books were written for people of that time who understood what that looked like.
Right, there's contextual writing and stories of that era in time, so when mm-hmm. we look back at, depending upon mm-hmm. where it was written and what time it was written, there are it relates to what was going on then,
right.
or prior. Yeah,
right, exactly.
Yeah. So what do you mean by like that? I'm hearing kind of a tone of something, but I'm not really sure what you mean though about that. You're talking about like the pressure of a father of a family, or like what?
Oh, well, yeah, the
patriarchal.
The patriarchal, where the father, the male, is the head of the family and makes all the decisions
right.
for the family,
mm-hmm.
and what direction they're going to go, what they're going to believe, where they're going to live. I mean, every decision.
So where does that tone of like kind of a like a maybe not positive thing come in for people?
Well, for some people, for example, a single mom might say, well, I'm making all the decisions for my family. Are they less valid because I'm not male?
Oh, yeah.
That's
mind doesn't have anything to do
yeah,
with it. But
yeah,
for some people, it does.
That's a hang-up
okay.
that a lot of people would have.
That's fair.
I just throw that out for people come into AA. It's been my experience that the biggest stumbling block for probably 90% of them is this God concept. This power greater than themselves. And a lot of it is for the same reason I had issues with it. If they had a religious upbringing and it was uncomfortable, through a punishing type God, why would you want to turn to that to save you from your alcoholism? There's other people who have either never had a concept of God, which is hard to believe in this day and age, but it's true. And then you have the militant atheist who comes into AA and says there is no God. So how do you explain to them that you need to have a power greater than yourself to help you stay sober? In a real good explanation, a friend of mine who's been on this program, Corey, explained it was he was struggling with it, and his first sponsor said to him, well, two of us can move this couch here way easier than one of us. So for the time being, you know, your higher power can be you and I working together. You know, that makes it about as simple as possible until, you know, you advance like I did, advance through the steps, being in the program, listening to what other people's conception of their higher power is, that I was able to tap into what the book calls an unrecognized or unrealized, I forget exact quote, inner resource that we have, which is that connection. For me, it's that connection to that higher power outside of myself. You know, what I call my God of my non-understanding. And that's a whole nother thing for me. You know, I tried to understand God and I realized the folly of that. I can only realize what, you know, my temporal self can accomplish, but I can rely on that power of my non-understanding regardless. You know, I don't have to understand it.
And I think, okay, I'm just going to give a I and me statement kind of story. So when I got into recovery, there was a lot of things that I didn't understand. A lot of, you know, steps and different kinds of things that people talked about. So if you're struggling with understandings and different things with step study, step programs or recovery or whatever, I would just encourage you to be kind to yourself and understand that when you're learning something new or experiencing something new, that's just it. You're learning something new, experiencing something new, and try not to get too stuck or hung up, because it doesn't have to be all at once. I mean, we're going through recovery and learning new things as we go. It's kind of an ongoing process. And so I almost want to say, if you're upset with somebody for the fact that they are talking about this, maybe look at when you're ready, maybe look at why is that, you know what I mean? And when you're ready, maybe there's some hurt underneath that that could get worked out. Not that I would say that needs to be done right away or anything, but I don't impose my beliefs on other people, and I sure hope no one else does that. And I think things come to you as they come to you in your journey, and our journeys in recovery all look different.
Right.
You know, so if you get into a meeting or you're working through some steps, just go a little bit at a time and go with what seems like a good place to start, knowing yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stuff with God will come or it won't come, and that's okay.
Right.
It's important, though, to be working on what's going to help you in your life keep your head above water, you know, so you're not living destructively, and that's going to look different for everyone, you know?
Yeah, and it says a little bit about that.
I think it's also so that you feel like you're not alone, too. There's something bigger than you.
Right. And he says here, after a few 24 hours in the AA fellowship, thanks especially to the sharing of members in the meetings, I understood that everyone gradually finds his or her own pace in moving through the steps. So, and I read that as being not only moving, well, in order to move through the steps, you have to have this conception of higher power, right? And if you're moving through the steps, you're learning those things. This is basically what you laid out there. But you laid it out in a much more eloquent way, I think, because this is only like a paragraph long. And, you know, we've got 45 minutes to, expand on that, which is part of what this program is about, to at least let people know how we came about building a belief in God or higher power, and, you know, some of the stumbling blocks, too.
Right.
I heard somebody explain, who was pretty much atheistic before coming into the program, and then once she was in, she came to the conclusion that when it's dark at night, the sun's still shining somewhere, and that if she turns her back on God, you know, he's still there. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of being willing to, you know, turn towards the light that's always there. And that was real helpful for me at, you know, at certain points when really crappy things happened in my life. You know, I was able to say, okay, this is really crappy and I feel really crappy right now. But I have faith, which I was talking about earlier. I have faith that once this passes, which I know it will, that I'll gain some understanding. Somebody said to me, there's two types of things that happen to you in AA, good things and lessons. So, you know, and lessons aren't always wonderful.
They don't always feel so good when you're going through them, no.
No, they don't.
They don't. But you can so grow from them. It can be life-changing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, if we're lucky, if we're paying attention and really wanting to move forward, like this person said in this reading here, we can learn from other people, not have to experience those same things again. There was a woman I knew in the program who had just gotten out of a really toxic relationship, and after a few weeks being sober, dove into another relationship, and another woman shared with her, that's really probably not a great idea right now. I'm not going to tell you you shouldn't, but our experience is that sometimes those things don't work out well. And she just said, uh-oh, and went ahead with the relationship, which collapsed before too long. You know, not because of any defect of hers necessarily, but just because of the, you know, trying to recreate yourself in a program or, you know, through a church or whatever, the chances of you making great decisions right off the bat, you know, are not necessarily great.
That's fair. That's fair. And I think that just kind of like letting them know this may not be a good idea is totally fair. And I think there's also value in learning from your mistakes too. But I think that ability to say to someone this may not be a good time, because it actually may not make sense to everyone, like why in general it is said. Like, I think what I heard mostly was like your first year in recovery,
yeah,
it's not good to start a new relationship. And what's so interesting about that is that some of us like, you know, are very relationship involved, and so that can seem like, what are you talking about, you know,
right,
kind of a situation. I get it now, but I certainly didn't get it then, you know.
Right,
there are, it took me a long time to be able to stand on my own and like be okay.
There are
like, I don't need that.
There are those serial monogamists out there who just have to be in a relationship. I mean, I totally get it. I had an uncle who his wife passed away after many, many years of marriage, and he got almost literally back into a relationship within a few months.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I said, geez, boy, you know, why would you just jump right back in like that? And he goes, I need the structure of marriage. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, he's also, I would say he's a recovered alcoholic through his own means. He never did a 12-step program. But that was like best answer I could think of.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times what I've heard is that guys that were happily married, that their wife passes away, tend to be more so into a new relationship within like 6 months or so.
Right.
You know, because they were happy.
Right.
You know, and it's probably fair to say that there's some people who, you know, were unhappy and then like waited. They're like, whoa, I think I'm going to, you know, take some space.
Right.
But I've always heard it's the happy guys that lose their wife that are like, yeah, no, I'm going to find someone else. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have seen that as well.
Yeah. And I would also just throw out a little tidbit of, if you're new in recovery, try to really work on making new friends. I think that part of my stuff throughout my life was just that I didn't have enough close friends, and it was easier to gain a boyfriend or, you know,
right,
a husband.
Sure.
And I really think friends play a really big role in that ability to be able to figure things out and not be in a relationship. that's really helpful.
Right.
Yeah. Because really what you need is community.
Right.
And relationships tend to get, you know, they can get a little complicated, a little sticky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. You know, even those happy relationships.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
if you're in a relationship and you've never had a heated discussion or argument with your with your mate,
yeah,
you're either heavily medicated. No, I won't go there.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, they're
it's healthy to find out how someone deals with conflict or
right.
like communication
right.
or problems. Like how does that? If you're new in a relationship, pay attention to how they treat people and you, everyone. I mean, that's the person driving down the road, your waiter, your waitress. The person on the phone you're calling about a bill problem, their friends, everyone. Look to see how they treat you, because at some point in time, it's been told to me, and I agree, that that's how you'll be treated as well. So you can really, I feel like you can learn a lot about somebody as to how they treat everyone.
Right.
Because at some point, we all get to our worst. And what is that? What does my worst look like, or what does someone else's worst look like?
Right. Right.
Please.
And I absolutely agree that I think the concept is called karma.
Yeah,
if you put the bad vibe out in the universe, it's going to come back to you eventually.
Yeah, and I think I got that one out of a book of, like, how to not marry a, and I can't say the rest of it.
Right.
And I just love that part. I was like, that's actually really good, you know? Like, don't think that you're better than everyone else, like, that you're just never going to get treated the way that, you know, that person treated this person or that person, because eventually that's just who somebody is, so pay attention.
Right, right. Hey, you know what? Why don't we take a short break here, get a drink of water, and listen to a little music, and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more, take a little turn on this subject, and go on with it. So we'll be right back. You're listening to KRFP 90.3 FM, Moscow Pullman.
When I'm I guess I called AA because alcohol didn't work anymore. Drinking used to give me a sense of meaning in life. I called AA not knowing what to expect. Certainly not cheerfulness, but that's what I got. People had humor. They seemed to be at ease. I hung around. Now I feel much more comfortable with myself and the people around me.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM, the coolest station in the nation. We're talking about paths are our own, in recovery and some of the specific things Denise and I touched on, relationships and how we conceive of a higher power and whatnot. Really talking about how we actually execute on some of these ideas of working along our paths of recovery. Mm-hmm. But there's something, at the heading of this that I kind of skipped over that's reasonably important, I think. And so the beginning where it says our paths are our own, it says there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. And for those of us who do not know or did not know what these spiritual tools they are talking about, and they run in accordance with the steps. I won't repeat the steps, but for step one, the tool is, or principle, they also call them principles. Step one is acceptance. Step two is hope. Step three is faith. Step four is courage. Step five, honesty. Step six, patience. Step seven, humility. Step eight, willingness. Step nine, brotherly love. Step 10, integrity. Step 11, self-discipline. And step 12, service. So when they talk about picking up the kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet, basically what they're saying is, and we say it in the book, to practice these principles in all our affairs. That's talking about when things are crappy, you might have to just accept it.
Right.
When things are scary, you might have to have courage. When something is confusing you, you might have to be willing to sit with it or sit through it until the answer comes or things become clear to you. Self-discipline, who doesn't need that? But these are things that the garden variety alcoholic like me really needs to focus on because my spiritual toolkit was empty. I was the hammer that everything I saw was a nail. And that's how I approached everything.
It's like, let me Johnny this.
Yeah.
Let me just Johnny that and Johnny this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I can relate.
Yeah, so many of these things, I mean, they're probably things that normal, healthy, temperate drinkers or, people who have a good, are in fit spiritual condition, as I like to say, don't even think about because they use them all the time. But for someone like me, it's sad, but it has to be pointed out. It's not in my nature, just like the way I drank is not normal. These things are also not normal to me, not normal behavior, or at least they weren't in the early days. Mm-hmm. They are more and more, but I have to remind myself constantly.
Right.
How about you? Do you practice these principles in all your affairs?
So I think when I got into recovery, I started having to figure out, how was I going to live? What were my values, And I think that these principles work really good for, as you're walking into your day, how are you going to go about it? I mean, when I see acceptance, it's like, yeah, there are times when temporarily I don't want to accept something because I'm processing, and that's okay,
Right.
But if I stay stuck in not accepting, what is,
mm-hmm.
that's a roadblock for me. I might just spin out the wrong way. So now going through things, accepting the situation, and then looking at it going, okay, well, this is what's going on. How am I going to handle it? What can I do to support myself? And working through it. Same thing with hope. Am I just going to get stuck completely hopeless in a situation and just give up? Nope. I'm going to have hope, and right. I'm going to keep moving forward. I'm going to look back at a lot of different things that I've been through and who's helped me through. you know, right. that's going to bring me hope, faith. I absolutely rely on my faith 100%. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a huge part of where I'm still standing today. And I can look back and see where my faith has gotten me through and God showed up. Courage. I don't always want to have courage, you know, but I've gotten more comfortable with what that looks like as I've been in recovery, you know,
right.
that there have been things that I've been up against that I've been able to get through with the help of others because I don't have to do life alone.
Right.
Honesty is always good because secrets get us in trouble. Being dishonest, typically there's something there that could be uncomfortable to like have a conversation about or whatever's going on. So now that I have support people and I've had counselors and different kinds of things, being able to navigate how to get through things like that and also having good boundaries helps a lot.
Yeah.
Patience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm middle-aged now, and so it's a little bit easier to have patience with people because I just don't have enough energy to go sideways on it. You know what I mean? It's just like, you're your person, I'm my person, this is where you're at, this is where I'm at. And so patience doesn't run into as much of a problem. Watch later, something will happen.
Right.
Humility. Exactly. It was really good for me to understand that I needed to have some humility and that, you know, my way wasn't the way.
And a great way someone explained to me to look at humility is not thinking less of yourself.
No.
But thinking of yourself less.
Yeah. Which actually works out really good.
Makes total sense. People think the opposite of humility is humiliation. It's not. The opposite of humility is ego. So anyway, I want to stop your roll.
Living in humility actually feels really good. Sometimes I have to check myself because my fleshy self wants to be a dork sometimes. But willingness. So I grew up with all this change that was super uncomfortable, and it came from things that were traumatizing. And so I didn't understand that people grow and change, and that's the natural process of stuff.
Right.
And so I used to fear that, and I really think that I've grown a lot in that change because the change that I've been doing has been bettering who I am and so that I can love others better. So that's come a long way. Brotherly love. So that's really helpful to me in the sense of like when I start getting spinning thoughts in my head and I'm being negative or unkind about someone else, I'm like, whoa, 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 wait. How does Jesus view this as I'm being unkind to others, you know,
right.
the things that I'm thinking and am I being there for people or am I letting like resentments or little hang-ups get in the way? And then that, again, that gets me stuck. So wanting to be kind to others and I really want to cheerlead others on. I want them to succeed. Integrity. It was a couple of years ago, a handful of years ago, and my good friend said something about me having high integrity. And I feel like that was one of the biggest compliments that I had received in recovery. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't see myself that way, and it took someone else to say that about me that really hit home, and that was just really special. So, and that makes life a lot easier when you can live in integrity. And there's a lot of things that for me that have had to go into that to make that happen. Well,
yeah, you know, for me it's kind of interesting because since I moved here 25 years ago, mm-hmm. nobody has known me as mm-hmm. Johnny the drunk.
Right.
So cool. There's really no reflection on what I used to be like. And when I share in meetings what I used to be like, people are like, oh my God, you were that guy? And I'm
right.
like, yeah, I was that guy. All that in a bag of chips. But I totally get, you know, when somebody says something like that to you, because I think we all come into recovery with a little bit of a negative self-image. I mean, if we're realistic
myself
with ourselves.
For good reason, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. For good reason. But to hear somebody say that, you know, you have integrity, which goes along with that 10th step, you know, continue to take our inventory, and when we're wrong, we promptly admit it. That's a
cool.
fantastic thing. That's a really cool thing. That's, take a side trip here real quick. I was talking with a fellow who was, like, terrified of being proud of himself for not drinking for a period of time, because it would feed his ego. And I said, well, you know, you can have pride in your accomplishments to a certain extent because, you know, you had to suit up and show up.
Right.
You know, maybe the program, what you're doing in here is, you know, making you the person you want to be, but you had to be willing to do it. And so don't totally dismiss pride in the early days, don't put it in the total sin bucket just yet.
Right.
You know, use that good feeling, that what you think is pride, actually, to bolster your program. That's okay. But anyway,
so it's obviously you did good. Self-discipline. So self-control, self-discipline, I feel like they're similar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So self-control is one of the fruits of the Spirit, and I've been working on that one. So that one's like an ongoing, I feel like that one's an ongoing thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Don't know that I'm quite where I want to be with self-discipline. And then service. And I do feel like that one, for many reasons, has been super helpful, and I do love how recovery groups do this thing where it's like, yeah, so would you like to come in and make the coffee, or would you like to do this? You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like these little things that seem like a lot in the beginning, and you may be like, I don't know if I want to do that. But when you get to a spot where you're like, oh, okay, I could probably do that, it's good because those little things are what help build up to more things. And it's, you know, for myself, it's like slowly got more comfortable to getting into the things that I do now.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say one of the most important things that I do for my recovery is connecting with others in a way that they're working on the things that are causing them problems in their lives, whatever it be. The thing that I do weekly where I show up and facilitate and I am a leader, people are working on all different kinds of things, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really important to me because there's something supernatural that happens in that connectedness where we get together and we're sharing about the struggles and the wins. There just really is. And we're accountability partners to each other. That's where I can dig in that safe space. That's super important. But even with my job, you know, like it's a job of being there for others.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, honestly, I think it's our calling to a certain extent, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all wound up here for a reason.
And there were so many people that helped us along the way. I mean, I feel like 1,000 would probably
right.
be, you know, over the, feels like 1,000 people. I know it's been hundreds over the last
right.
11 years that have been a little part or a big part in my recovery. And
right.
I'm sure for you as well, you know?
Right. Well, it says it in our literature, you know, in the 12th step. We tried to carry this message to the still suffering alcoholic. I mean, that's the ultimate service, where we get the concept of you got to give it away to keep it. But there's, like you're saying, there's all kinds of service. I mean,
totally.
My first service was I made the mistake of showing up early to meetings, just because in the early sobriety, all I did was go from meeting to meeting. That's all I could do.
Right.
That's the best I could do for myself at that point, because my brain was still reasonably overdone.
You're figuring out what to do with yourself that wasn't drinking.
Right,
know?
Exactly.
So what in the world was there to life if there
right.
wasn't that?
So I showed up early, and I got to put chairs out and set up tables, and then I would hang around afterwards, and they said, well, here, why don't you wash these ashtrays out, because mm-hmm. you could smoke in meetings back then. And it's like, well, if
things.
You get here just a little bit earlier, we'll show you how to make the coffee.
Right.
And then put chairs out, and then afterwards you can wash the ashtrays or
right.
the coffee cups. And, you know, it wasn't too terribly long before somebody stuck a key in my hand
right.
and said, well, you can get here just a little earlier,
mm-hmm.
and you can open the door and then make the coffee and then set the chairs and the tables up, and then hang around afterwards and do dishes, and maybe you should talk to the newcomers when they come in.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the service for me evolved, and I think it does. Our friend Jay says, he goes, AA is really good at giving people simple little jobs to do.
Right.
To help them recover. And I think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know what else is true? We're at the end of our time.
There we go.
So thanks again, Denise, for suiting up and showing up
mm-hmm.
and doing your service.
My pleasure.
And close with the usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with substances or behavioral health, you do.